Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk take the roll?
25 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Assistant Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, excused today from, from the call of the House are Representatives Cato, Martin, Hanley, Fuller, Furness, Clarkson, Adams, Davis, although I know Mr. Davis is present, or at least he was, and Phillips, who is excused from 4:30 on.
Our chaplain today is Ms. Rebecca McKinnon of the Baha'i Faith. Will the members please rise for the invocation?
O thou compassionate Lord, thou who art generous and able, we are servants of thine shelter beneath thy providence. Cast thy glance of favor upon us. Give light to our eyes, hearing to our ears, and understanding and love to our hearts. Render our souls joyous and happy through thy glad tidings. O Lord, point out to us the pathway of thy kingdom, and resuscitate all of us through the breath of the Holy Spirit. Bestow upon us life everlasting, and confer upon us never-ending honor. Unify mankind, illumine the world of humanity. May we all follow thy pathway, long for thy good pleasure, and seek the mysteries of thy kingdom. O God, unite us and connect our hearts with an indissoluble bond. Verily thou art the giver, thou art the kind one, and thou art the almighty.
Representative Collins, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Pettyjohn. Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objection as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 66th and the 67th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 66th and 67th days in House Supplement number 99.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I move that the body approve the journal for the 66th and 67th days in House Supplement number 99 as certified by the chief clerk.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journals or the supplement? Hearing no objections, the journal and supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, a friend and constituent of mine, from Kenai, the president of the Kenai Chamber of Commerce, Roger Hall.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, we have a distinguished guest and a constituent to Representative Hurley and myself, a gentleman who is the leader of one of our fine communities, and I might add, one of the communities in the state of Alaska that has both a property tax and a sales tax. His honor, the mayor, George Carte.
Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a great deal of honor today to introduce a visiting constituent from my district and Representative Taylor's, and also a relative of mine, and brought along a friend, but I have my niece Tracy is here today, and also that she came, my daughter Teresa also got out of school. They're in Gallery A over here, if they'd stand up.
Are there any further introduction of guests? In Gallery B, there's a group of Blatchley Junior High students that every year their instructor has a program by which they competitively compete after their studies in Alaska government on everything from political cartooning to essays. Would the members of the 8th grade Blatchley Junior High and their instructor, Harvey Brandt, please stand up? Any further guests for introduction? This brings us down to messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The message was, Mr. Speaker, the Senate has approved and transmitted the following citations for consideration. Honoring Joanne Hall by Senator Rohde, and in memoriam Joseph J. Waddell by Senators Eliason, Ray, Ziegler, and Halford, and Representative Hurley. And it was further stated that the Senate has passed the following, and they were transmitted to enrolling. Honoring Don Harrison, honoring Frederica Martin, honoring the Huna Alaska Native Brotherhood basketball team gold medal B champions, and honoring the Young Alaskans Alaska Native Leadership Project. I have no further citations for introduction.
Those citations that are sent to the House for our consideration will be placed in rules for calendaring.
There are no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
We've received from the Department of Education a notice of proposed regulations dealing with teacher certification and reimbursement for school construction debt retirement. And we've also received the proposed regulations dealing with the scholarship loan program. And these are on file in the Speaker's office. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee has considered Senate Bill 361, Powers of Magistrates and the Extradition of Fugitives, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring, M.M. Miller, Sun, Gruenberg, Taylor, Phillips, and Clarkson. Senate Bill 361 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 160, Relocation of Utilities Incident to Highway Projects, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 160 Finance with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring, Szymanski, Adams, Ringstad, Duncan, Porchot, Binkley, Rieger, Frank, Euling, and Larson. House Bill 160 has no further referral. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 430, Regulating Audiologists, Hearing Aid Dealers, and the Dispensing of Hearing Aids, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 430 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs Gruenberg and Kopanen, concurring Taylor, Hurley, Gruenberg, Thompson, Hanley, and Kopanen. Pettijohn has no recommendation. House Bill 430 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has had House Bill 438, Penalties for Violating the Alaska Historic Preservation Act, under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 438, Judiciary, with the same title and that it do pass and attaches 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring, M.M. Miller, Sun, Taylor, Phillips, and Gruenberg. Clarkson has no recommendation. House Bill 438 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 460, Off-Road Vehicles, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 460, Transportation, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing do pass, Pinalberry, Cato, and Davis. Herman signed, do not pass will be unforeseeable and unenforceable in rural Alaska. House Bill 460 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 463, Criminal Trials and Restitution, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 463, Judiciary, with a new title, and reports it back as follows with 2-0 fiscal notes and a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, and Clarkson. Having no recommendation, Sund, Gruenberg, Pettijohn, and Phillips. Taylor signed do not pass. House Bill 463 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 496, Spousal Support and Attorney Fees During Divorce Proceedings and to Judicial Review of Marriage Dissolution Agreements, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 496, Judiciary, with a new title, and reports it back with a letter of intent and a new fiscal note and two new zero fiscal notes. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Gruenberg, and Clarkson. Signing do not pass, Taylor. Having no recommendation, Sund, Pettijohn, and Phillips. House Bill 496 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 502, Disclosure of State Tax Assessments of the Department of Revenue, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 502, Judiciary, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman. Signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Sund, Gruenberg, and Phillips. Having no recommendation, Taylor, Pettijohn, and Clarkson. House Bill 502 appears on today's calendar. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 512, Appointments to the Boards of Fisheries and Game, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 512 Resources with the same title and that it do pass. The report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurring Schultz, Wallace, M.W. Miller, Thompson, Pierce, Jenkins, and Cato. Sund has no recommendation. House Bill 512 has no further referral. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 518, Municipal Property Taxation, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 518, CNRA, with a new title and that it do pass. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, concurring Maru, Kopanen, Phillips, Gall, and Grunberg. House Bill 518 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 603, Dispensing Opticians, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Grunberg and Kopanen, concurring Taylor, Hurley, Thompson, Hanley, Grunberg, and Kopanen. Taylor has no Pettijohn has no recommendation. House Bill 603 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 605, Establishing the Shuyak State Game Refuge, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 605, Finance, with the same title and that it do pass, and attaches 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Ringstad, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Rieger, and Binkley. Signing no recommendation, Szymanski, Frank, and Cotton. House Bill 605 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 611, Air Carriers, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 611, Transportation, with the same title and that it do pass and attaches a 0 fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Cato, Chairman, concurring Cato, Davis, and Pinalberry. Schultz signed change line 15 from $50 to $25. House Bill 611 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 627, Use of Water, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 627, Resources, with the same title, and that it do pass and attaches a 0 fiscal note. The report was signed by Schultz, co-chair, concurring Schultz, Cato, Jenkins, Pierce, Miller, M.W. Miller, and Wallace. Thompson signed, do pass, don't throw cold water on this bill. House Bill 627 has a further referral to the Hess Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 630, Suspended Imposition of Sentence, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 630, Judiciary, with a new title and that it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Sun, Grunberg, Taylor, Pettijohn, and Phillips. Clarkson has no recommendation. House Bill 630 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 635, Establishing the Willow Creek Recreation Area, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 635, Resources, with the same title and that it do pass and attaches a 0 fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Ringstad, Szymanski, Duncan, Porchot, Larson, Euling, Binkley, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton. House Bill 635 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 640, State Physical Therapy Board, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 640, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a 0 fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Navarre, Chairman, concurring Navarre, Hanley, Pearson, Davis. House Bill 640 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 689 relating to motor vehicles, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 689, Judiciary, with a new title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Sun, Grunberg, Taylor, Phillips, Pettijohn, and Clarkson. House Bill 689 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gull.
Mr. Speaker, could we just take a moment to return to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections to moving back up the calendar? Hearing no objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have a great deal of pride today in introducing to you the mayor of another political subdivision with both a sales tax and a property tax, my friend and colleague and borough mayor of Haines, Robert Henderson. Thank you.
Are there any further guests for introduction? Moving back down the calendar, we go to reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring the Angoon Old Timers Basketball Team 1986 Gold Medal C Bracket Champions by Representative Gall. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
That citation will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House Bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 598 by Maru by request, an act relating to hunting safety education.
That'll have three standing committee referrals: Resources, Judiciary, and Finance.
House Bill 700 by the Rules Committee by request, an act relating to regulation of alcoholic beverages and enactment of municipal ordinances.
Community and Regional Affairs, Judiciary, and the Finance.
House Bill 701 by the Rules Committee by request, an act relating to regulation of telecommunications services.
This will go to the Special House Committee on Telecommunications and the Labor and Commerce Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 485 by Sund and Grunberg, an act relating to powers and duties of guardians. The Hess Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 485 Hess with the same title and that it do pass and attaches 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Grunberg, Kopanen, Hurley, Taylor, Pettijohn, and Thompson. Hanley has no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 485 Judiciary and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.A. Miller, Chairman, concurring Sun, Grunberg, Taylor, and Pettijohn. Signing do not pass, Clarkson, having no recommendation, M.A. Miller and Phillips. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Assistant Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 485 Judiciary be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute Judiciary has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to the First Amendment that's before us in second reading?
Amendment number 1 by Maru, page 1, line 20. After when, add, two attending physicians concur that.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment and ask for unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, the representative may continue.
Mr. Speaker, line 20, page 1, has to do with life-saving procedures and when they can be withheld, et cetera. And what I suggest here is what I suggested on a similar bill the other day, and that is that we have two physicians concur that those procedures will serve only to prolong the dying process and so forth and so on. Therefore, two attending physicians concur that would be inserted on line 20 between the words when and those, so it would read medical procedures when two attending physicians concur that those procedures will serve only to prolong, pardon me, the dying process. I think it's only logical that we get two opinions in a matter of this important nature.
Any further debate on amendment number 1? Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to oppose the amendment, and I think most of us went through many of these arguments on the floor last week. The one is the factor of there may not be two physicians available in the rural hospitals, and we discussed that quite thoroughly. The other point I'd like to make is that there may be more, but there's usually just one attending physician, and there may be some consulting physicians, but in a case-by-case basis, you may have one person as the attending only physician in a case. In other cases, you may have a whole team of doctors working on this, and I think the statute reads fairly clear. It deals with medical procedures. And to me, it's very carefully crafted statute, and I don't want to get into the rest of it, but this has gone through by the Hospital Association. It's been looked over quite thoroughly by all the people in the medical field and in the Guardian field, and they've come and feel very comfortable with the way it's written now, and I do too. And I would oppose the amendment and ask the members to vote no.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel that this amendment, though well-intended, is a bureaucratic boondoggle which adds more stages of interference with what would ordinarily be an individual right to decide. Thank you.
Any further debate on amendment number 1? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Did the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
7 yeas, 24 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention to that last vote. It did exceed 30 votes, did it not?
My board's clear.
Yes.
Yes, it did.
Okay,
31.
That's fine, because earlier on we had only 25 recorded. Mr. Speaker, I'll move that the committee substitute for House Bill Number 435, Judiciary, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee Substitute for House Bill 485, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to powers and duties of guardians.
Is there any debate? Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to briefly bring the members through on what this bill is. It's one of those bills that has a zero fiscal note and yet has an impact on many people in this state. And the point of the bill is to put guardians and those who are appointed as guardians of wards into a decision-making posture or into the middle of an area dealing with medical treatment. And it's very carefully crafted, it's very narrowly crafted statement. But under the existing statutes, a guardian, no matter what the situation is, can never say no to withholding of life-saving medical procedures, and no matter what the example is. And I guess the best statement I've heard on this bill was given by Sister Barbara, and then the sisters do run the hospital in Ketchikan, even though it's owned by the city of Ketchikan. And I provided that in a packet for all the members. But it basically, it's worded, it's in a double negative wording, which makes it a little complicated to read, but it's the intent of that is so that the people will not be in a position to advocate the withholding of medical procedures, but just that they, when it comes time to make a decision, that they do have a decision that all other people who are not guardians have the right to make. And the example given, and the easiest one I can give, is the person who's has a failure of the kidneys or a kidney failure that maybe has 24 hours to 48 hours left on their life. And there's no question about it. The question is, then comes up, if the person has a cardiac arrest or something, should they go in and try to resuscitate this person with a defibrillation and an intrusion and shoot needles into the person's heart, or can they just say no? In a situation of you and I, Mr. Speaker, with people that we represent but are not appointed guardians, our children, or in many cases our parents, who are not formally appointed, we can sit down and make that decision, yes or no. But once a guardian is appointed, under our existing statute, the guardian always has to say, no, don't stop. This bill merely is not to say the person has to say yes, it's just to put them into a more neutral position to say, I want to make a decision, I have to make a decision, but I can make the decision, yes or no. And we had quite a bit of testimony in the HES Committee and in Judiciary in favor of this bill, and every word basically has gone over fairly craftily and trying to narrow it down to those exact situations and not to expand beyond that. And I would note that there are other areas in the statute that the guardian is, by law, responsible to provide for the care and comfort of the ward and to take care of that person and act in his behalf. And I think this statute moves towards letting the guardian act in behalf of the ward. I appreciate the vote for the bill.
Any further debate? Representative Pignalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question. Once again, we're faced with a bill that has very wide-reaching effect for those people who are involved. And not having heard any complaints from any part of the public myself, I just wonder where the impetus for the bill comes from. And I'd like to know, in the course of the hearings through this body, about how many hours of hearings were held, and who came forward to testify? How many people were there to testify, and who were they? Is this a bill that has been introduced on behalf of one, two, or three people from a certain segment of the state who see this as a problem, or is it something that the medical community and the healthcare community widely spread throughout the state is concerned about?
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, as a member of both HES and Judiciary, which considered this bill, in response to the question of my friend from East Anchorage, the principal testimony, as the representative from Ketchikan mentioned, and the most telling testimony came from Sister Barbara, and it certainly made a deep impression on me because she was obviously a lady who felt very deeply about her ethical responsibilities and her her duties as a nurse and as an administrator of a hospital. And it was apparent to me that the impetus from this bill for this bill came from people who are dealing with people in dying situations. And under the law, they're obeying the law. The law says if there's a guardian, you just keep them alive no matter what. And as a result, as obeying the law and trying to do what they're required under the law, they take people who are just literally with maybe a day or two or 3 days left in their life and submit these people to extreme measures just to prolong it for another hour or another day. They tear their chests open and do all kinds of radical medical procedures. And it wasn't just Sister Barbara, but all the representative of all the hospitals was in favor of it too. And I think that's where it's coming from. And I would urge members to vote for the bill.
Any further debate? Representative Miller.
Comment just a little further, and in furtherance of what my colleague from Anchorage just said. As you know, Mr. Speaker, there's a tendency to get this sort of bill mixed up with the living will bill, and I voted against that bill. But this really is a different breed of cat entirely. This bill merely puts the guardian in more or less the position that the members, that the sick person's family would be. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, that's where I want the decision making made. I want the family to gather around and make those decisions, particularly if the person himself or herself can't do it. Well, in some cases, you don't have family. It's an older person that there's no family left, or maybe it's an indigent and there's no family around. So the guardian is in that family position. But unfortunately, under existing law, the guardian is prohibited, absolutely prohibited, from not objecting to the from the withholding of these medical procedures. And so this merely puts that guardian in the position to sort of be like family. And if in that guardian's best judgment, the guardian says, no, I think there's a fighting chance, let's keep on with the heroic measures, in which case, that's the way it goes. But if there is no hope, and again, that guardian is putting himself or herself as the family member, the court-appointed family member, then they say, oh, look, it's hopeless, the person is suffering, let's do it. And there's nothing else that is in such dispute in the living will. I mean, we're not talking about hydration and nutrition. We're not talking about all these other elements. So in spite of the fact that I remain firmly in opposition to the living will type legislation, I will be voting for this one.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 485 Judiciary pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
32 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 485, Judiciary, has passed the House. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 502 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, an act relating to the disclosure of state tax assessments of the Department of Revenue. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 502 and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 502 Finance with a new title, reports it back as follows with a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Adams, Zemanski, Porchot, and Cotton, having no recommendation, Ringstad, Binkley, Larson, Euling, and Frank. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 502 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Sun, Gruenberg, and Phillips, signing no recommendation, Taylor, Pettijohn, and Clarkson. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having two committee substitute, Mr. Assistant Majority Leader.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill number 502 Judiciary be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing objections, Representative Euling.
Yes, can we have a brief description on the Judiciary Committee substitute versus the other, the Finance, please?
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, I was very appreciative of the Judiciary Committee's work on this bill. They worked late one night and spent some time on it again yesterday afternoon. The major difference between the Finance Committee substitute and the Judiciary Committee substitute has to do with the subject of Amendment Number 1, at least partially. But I think that there were a couple other minor amendments made, but the major amendment was to deal with the waiver of immunity. And the conclusion of the Judiciary Committee was that a legislator, it was my interpretation that their conclusion was that a legislator may not waive immunity. In fact, again, my interpretation of their action was that that immunity did not belong just to the legislator. In fact, that immunity belonged to the public, and as a result, the legislator wasn't able to waive it. The Judiciary Committee deleted subsection I, I think on page 4 of the Finance Committee substitute. I've got an amendment on the clerk's desk that would address a question that I think that might have been overlooked by the Judiciary Committee inadvertently, but again, the immunity clause was the major amendment made by the Judiciary Committee.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to be completely responsive to the representative from downtown Anchorage, there were 4 amendments that were made to the Finance Committee substitute. The first was at page 3, line 25. And if you would compare the two, you can follow right along with me. The words "a willful" were deleted, and the word "an intentional" was substituted. And the reason was because the word "intentional" is defined in the Criminal Code, Title 11, and "willful" is not. Second, before the word, on page 3, line 26, before the word "felony," the phrase "Class C" was inserted, and the deletion, the remaining language after "felony," right there, was deleted. And this change makes it a Class C felony and standardizes the penalties and violations. And a number of us feel, as we go through various sections of the law, which were in place prior to the 1980 revision of the Criminal Code, that it's important to standardize the felonies and misdemeanors, and this was just one attempt at standardization. On page 4, line 16, following the word "and," there was a deletion of the word "a," and that was replaced with the word "any." That was simply a grammatical change. And finally, as the chairman of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee mentioned, on page 4, line 18, subsection I was deleted in its entirety.
Thank you. Are objections maintained to the adoption of the committee's substitute judiciary? Hearing no objections, that committee's substitute judiciary has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to the First Amendment before us today?
I have Amendment Number 1 by Cotton to page 4, line 21, and it is on every member's desk, and I have an amendment, excuse me.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of Amendment Number 1.
Object. Hearing objections, you have the floor, Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I feel that this amendment is necessary to make it absolutely clear that it's against the law to disclose this information, and that means it's against the law for anybody to disclose this information, including members of the legislature, former members of the legislature, employees of the legislature, and former employees of the legislature. Now, in some cases, those employees or those members may be able to exercise the immunity clause in our state constitution. Obviously, in those cases, the person would maintain that immunity. But in those cases where that immunity wouldn't apply, then a disclosure by a member of the legislature under those circumstances would constitute a violation. And that person, if convicted, would be guilty of a Class C felony. I think it's important to make sure that just because we're legislators and sometimes we enjoy immunity, that in those cases where we don't, we should be susceptible to the same penalties as any other person who would have access to this information.
Okay, we have Amendment Number 1 before us, and we have also on our desk an amendment to Amendment Number 1. Would the clerk please make reference to that?
Amendment to Amendment Number 1 by Gruenberg, and it's to page 4, line 21. At the amendment of at the end of Amendment Number 1, add the following, and this has also been placed on each desk.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know parliamentarily is the proper for me to move the amendment to the amendment first.
Right.
Thank you. At this point, I would move amendment to number, I guess it's amendment to amendment number one, and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was the author of the amendment in Judiciary Committee that eliminated subsection I. And I think for the members to really understand what's going on, you need to pull out your Finance Committee substitute and look on page 4, line 18, and see the original subsection I. If you contrast that to the Judiciary Committee substitute, on page 4, line 21, the present subsection I was subsection J. Subsection I has been entirely eliminated. What amendment number 1 would do, Mr. Speaker, is to reinsert a new subsection I. And what my amendment to the amendment would do is to add additional language at the end of amendment number 1. What the original subsection I did was to provide something that we felt was almost, if not entirely, unprecedented. And that was to provide a statutory waiver of a constitutional right. And as the members know, we have what is called the Speech and Debate Immunity Clause. And it is found in the Constitution in Article 2, Section 6. And it's also found in a statute in AS 24.40.010. And this is a very important immunity because it guarantees the right of free legislative debate. And the Attorney General has held, and a number of decisions have held, that this immunity cannot be waived by a legislator, since the immunity is intended to protect the public as well as to serve the convenience of legislators. And this is at the heart of the legislative process, and it's the entire policy behind both the statute and the amendment to the state constitution, the constitutional provision. And this issue, in a slightly different context, involving former Senator Gravel, reached the U.S. Supreme Court in the case of Mike Gravel versus the United States, the Pentagon Papers case, which I'm sure everybody remembers. And the issue in that case was whether an aide to a senator who was acting within the legislative duties would be covered by the constitutional protection, whether it would extend to the staff as well as to the senator himself. It was broadly construed because of the strong public policy here. Now, what we did was we said there would be no waiver, but what this language that's going to be put in amendment number one, assuming amendment number one is adopted, would do would be to provide that the disclosure of information is a violation of this section. It would not and could not override the constitutional protection, but it could be construed by a court as overriding the statutory protection. And the statute that I have referred to, AS 24.40.010, is slightly broader than the constitutional protection. For example, the statute provides that for the purposes of going to and returning from a session or meeting, the immunities provided extend to a legislator for a period of 5 days immediately preceding and following the legislator's attendance at the session or meeting. In other words, under state law, under this statute, we, and I would submit under the Gravel analysis, our staffs, if they're acting in support of what we're doing, are extended a broader protection than they are under the Constitution. And this is a provision that belongs to the public, and it's exceedingly important. And for this reason, I have offered this particular amendment to make it certain that nothing in amendment number one would be read as superseding the statutory immunity in AS 24.40.010.
And I think this is exceedingly important, and it's at the heart of our free debate and at the heart of the legislative process. And I would ask support on amendment number one. Thank you.
Our objections maintained to the amendment to amendment number one. Representative Cotton.
With great trepidation, I'll discuss the Constitution as I see it. I believe that the Constitution, and he's not referring to the Constitution in his amendment to the amendment, but the Constitution does grant certain immunities. And the statute that the representative from Spinard has referred to attempts to describe by law or attempts to interpret that section of the Constitution. I just don't think it's necessary. I don't believe this amendment hurts or helps the bill. I don't think it's necessary. Secondly, I think that the 5 days coming from and returning from a legislative session has more to do with the privilege from arrest section. And the speech and debate clause has primarily to do with what we talk about on the floor of this House. And if a legislator were to stand up on the floor of this House and read some confidential information, I believe that the immunities section in the Constitution would apply to that person at that time. Again, I don't believe that the amendment hurts or helps the bill, but I don't believe it's necessary.
Are there objections to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing objections, Representative Grunberg.
Just very briefly, the language of the statute makes it clear that all immunities, not just the privilege from arrest, extend for a period of 5 days. And I'm just, Mr. Speaker, using that as an example, that one section of law. There could be other sections of law of which I'm not aware, and the legislature could act in the future. I just think that this privilege of free speech and debate is so fundamental and so important that I'm offering the amendment. And I think it could very well make a difference. I certainly wouldn't mess around with the amendment or the bill unless I felt very deeply. Thank you.
Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a minor comment and a question for the maker of the amendment. The minor comment is that there's a misspelled word, supersede, is spelled with two S's and no C's. And the question is, the last 2.5 lines of the amendment says, to a present or former employee or agent of the legislature. What immunities, in fact, are granted normally to a present or former employee or agent of the legislature, not including legislators themselves?
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Speaker, the aid question, the present or former employees, we're talking about someone who was acting. Generally, this would apply, and it's already the language of the amendment itself. The amendment to the amendment simply in this respect tracks the language of the amendment itself. But we are talking here about someone who may have disclosed information in the course of their duties, but at the time of the prosecution may be a former member. Obviously, if somebody is not at the time of disclosure an aide, they are not covered by anything. But this language was inserted, I believe, by the maker of the original amendment, and the original language was in the bill, to cover people at the time of prosecution who at the time of disclosure had been members, but at the time of prosecution no longer were members. And if there's I'm not sure I understood about the spelling. Was that referring to the amendment or the amendment?
Clerically, we can take care of that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Borchow, were you seeking the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't claim to know much about the topic or constitutional law. I do know one thing, though, that whatever we're doing in Amendment Number 1 is not going to supersede any constitutional rights that we have. What my worry is that amendment to the amendment may indeed broaden rights in statute, perhaps, that we don't intend here. And frankly, I strongly support Amendment Number 1. I don't want to see employees of the legislature somehow 2 years later disclose confidential information and slip out, so to speak, because of something we may have done in the amendment. So I continue to oppose the amendment to the amendment.
Are you ready for the questions? Representative Gruenberg.
Just one thing so that it's absolutely clear. The use of the word supersede at the end of line one is not intended and should not be interpreted to broaden any other statutory immunity. It's to leave the statutory immunities alone and not narrow them.
You ready for the question? The question is, should amendment to the amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
13 yeas, 20 nays.
The amendment has failed adoption. We are back on debate on amendment number one. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
33 yeas, no nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, in the absence of further amendments, I ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 502, Judiciary as amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing none, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 502, Judiciary amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to confidential tax information of the Department of Revenue and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a little history and behind this bill. Last summer, on the Budget and Audit Committee was holding a meeting up in the Mat-Su Borough, and we learned something that day as an appropriation was being transferred from the Department of Revenue to the Department of Law in order to prosecute some back tax cases. We learned that there were in excess of $900 million in what at that time we referred to as back taxes, and since the term has been carefully defined as disputed taxes. At the moment, the Department of Revenue allows that even after the $243 million severance tax settlement with a major oil company early this year, there is still today in excess of $1 billion in dispute. And the Budget and Audit Committee and members of the legislature have attempted to find out what the issues in dispute are, who are the delinquent, or who is disputing taxes with the state, and a lot of other questions in an effort to find out what the problem is. And each effort has been responded to with a phrase, "I'm sorry, we can't give you that information, it is confidential." Another example that came to light, again, as I mentioned earlier this year, was a settlement with the state of Alaska and a major oil company. And the settlement was for $243 million in what had been disputed severance taxes. We asked $243 million out of how much, or what had the assessment been? And again, the answer we got back was, "I'm sorry, we can't tell you, that's confidential information." Those are a couple of examples and symptoms of a problem that I think this bill would go quite a ways toward correcting. The original bill introduced allowed that the assessments made by the Department of Revenue would be made public. And I and the members of the Finance Committee became convinced that that might go beyond the bounds of a person, which would include a corporation's right to privacy, and it might also damage a company's competitive situation if those numbers or that information was released to the public. So dropping back one step and trying to allow as much oversight for the public as possible, we examined other state laws and primarily followed the procedures used by the United States as far as making information available to a committee in executive session. This bill would do a couple things that mechanically. A committee would have to identify the scope of its investigation or its inquiry.
the body, either the House or the Senate, would have to pass a simple resolution authorizing that committee to receive the information. The Department of Revenue and the legislature would provide procedures for safeguarding and safekeeping of that confidential information. This amendment, of course, I think people understand that it would be a violation of the law. In addition to that, it would be a violation of the Legislative Ethics Code. In case there was a problem with prosecution while we were immune, the legislature would still have the opportunity to police its own membership. It also, in Section 7, I believe, at least near the end of the bill, it excludes information that the state receives under exchange agreements with the Internal Revenue Service. The legislative findings and purpose section are fairly self-explanatory, but they discuss the reasons why this is important and emphasize that the legislature needs this information to exercise its oversight authority, and especially these days, budget planning. We'd like to know, for instance, when those disputes would be or could be settled. And I think it adds an important tool to the legislature and doesn't cross the boundary of entering into executive function. We won't become tax collectors, or we won't make deals with taxpayers on settlements, but we, as a legislative body, would have the opportunity to at least have that information. I think it's an important tool for the legislature.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to point out to my colleagues what appear to be a couple of small problems or large problems, depending on how you view it. On top of page 4, at line 2, says the adoption by either house of a simple resolution giving the committee authority to receive confidential tax information. In my opinion, this is meaningless because the majority controls, obviously, all committees and the full house. So saying in here that we're going to require a simple resolution means nothing. If the committee requests it, the simple resolution will be automatic on the floor of the House. So that's meaningless. The second thing is that lines 3, 4, and 5 conflict with lines 7 and 8. If you follow me here, at the end of line 3, it says it may request the Commissioner of Revenue to provide, etc. Whereas on line 7, it says the Commissioner of Revenue shall provide. Now, both of them say on adoption of a resolution. However, line 3 says may request. Line 7 says the commissioner shall provide. We have either redundant language or certainly contradictory language between lines 3, 4, and 5 versus lines 7 and 8. Overall, I have read this bill with considerable interest. I have tried deep within my heart to find some sympathy for the state tax collectors, and I have found it difficult to find any sympathy for any tax collector, including those who work for the state of Alaska. Therefore, this would seem to me to increase the surveillance and delving into the personal affairs of either individual citizens or corporate citizens, and I therefore object to this bill, and I object to the state getting more involved with trying to squeeze more money out of more people to support a larger bureaucracy.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'll respond to the first two points. First, I don't believe there is a conflict. I believe that a committee may request, and if that committee requests and passes the resolution, then the commissioner shall provide the information. I don't believe that's conflicting. Secondly, in relation to the procedure that the legislature will have to go through, other states and the United States have a much simpler procedure. It's called a subpoena. And the subpoena works something like this. The majority of the committee has to ask for it, and the presiding officer has to sign it. And then the information is delivered. The representative from Bethel and the Finance Committee proposed, and the amendment was adopted, that we put one more step in that process and require this full body to approve that committee's request.
Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to address some of the issues that Representative Spinard brought up on the debate and immunity section here and the long discussion that we had in judiciary regarding that. And if I can get clear of what we've kind of crafted here in this amendment to the bill, it basically says that we have the privilege and immunity of speech on the floor of the House. If you look in Article 2, Section 6 of the Constitution, that's an exercise, it's a right that we of legislators have. And I personally don't believe it's a right that we have that we can waive. I think it's a public right, and it's not a right that any individual can waive. So we took that amendment, the provision out that said, notwithstanding the Constitution, which is always an interesting phrase, and went with the other argument. If I can figure out how this new amendment works now, is that the legislator who receives this information and discloses it during session on, say, the floor of this House is in violation of the law, but can assert his privilege and immunity right as a defense, and probably in my mind succeed. But on the other hand, he's also violated the ethics code by this legislation, and then it would be up to this body sitting as in judge of its own membership to say, what should we do with this person, even if he may not be liable for a felony. We can exercise our own constitutional authority to discipline this person. And then that brings up the question, what happens if the member discloses it between sessions? Are you in session or are you not in session? And the next step is what happens if it gets disclosed after the person is out of office? And I presume by this is that once you're out of office, you probably have lost your constitutional immunity, so that violation of that puts you in violation of the law without a defense. And that's the only points I want to make as far as I'm concerned, that I'm no way by voting for this bill or agreeing to see this information waiving my right or a right that I have on the floor of this House. And I may not want to even get to see this information. So the other thing is just a little bit of, I'd like to take you into a kind of a humorous kind of a scene. I can foresee this in a year or two. Somebody who has opted through this, we have passed a resolution, and we've had three or four of our members go over and look at these tax returns and see the reason we have not been collecting these back taxes, and have come back with a statute, and they're on the floor of the House advocating the adoption of a new revision in our tax code to solve the problem. And another member gets up and asks the question, is why do we need this new law? And the person says, I'm sorry, I can't tell you because it's confidential. But thank you.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to respond to a suggestion made by the representative from Homer that the legislature's only interest might be in the harassment of a taxpayer. And I certainly have no more interest than he does in any such harassment. And you know, I've looked at this when the bill was before us in finance, and my main concern was about whether or not there could be some disclosure of information which could hurt the private sector. And I think that in my discussions both with our own Department of Law and our own legislative legal services and looking at the bill, a lot of those protections are afforded. But one of the concerns I have is that the legislature does have a responsibility of oversight over the administration. And one of the arguments I would say in favor of the legislation is not in any way to take any action against the private sector, but rather to make sure that the administration is being reasonable in a whole section of their responsibilities. And they can be reasonable in a lot of different ways, but I think we want to see that what is being done there is what is being done fairly. And therefore, although I have had a lot of concerns about the disclosure, I think some of the changes that the Judiciary Committee has made, especially the clearer wording of intentional disclosure in the amendment on the floor today, has helped close those loopholes. And I think that we still should also, in our vote, think about whether we have a responsibility to see what the administration is doing here, not what the taxpayers are doing here.
Are you ready for the question?
The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 502, judiciary amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
30 yeas, 3 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 502, judiciary amended, has passed the House.
I believe there's an effective date. Is there an effective date on that?
I don't think.
Yes, there is.
Okay, I beg your pardon. Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 502, Judiciary Amended, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I give notice of reconsideration of my vote on CSHB 502, Judiciary.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 694 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, an act relating to the establishment of the Metlakatla Housing Authority. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, and they also attached a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Kopanen, Furness, Gruenberg, and Gall, do pass, and having no recommendation, Phillips. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Zemanski, Duncan, Larson, Ringstead, Euling, Porchot, Frank, and Cotton. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Representative Miller.
Speaker, in the absence of amendments, I ask unanimous consent that House Bill 694 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the title of that bill for the third time?
House Bill number 694 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, an act relating to the establishment of the Metlakatla Housing Authority.
It's before us in third reading. Any debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 694 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
31 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 694 has passed the House. We have some final action on a few citations. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that citations appearing on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the citation on today's calendar stand approved. Representative Szymanski.
Can we have brief at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had just completed the consideration of the daily calendar. This brings us down to unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like at this time to bring up the reconsideration of HJR 52, nuclear freeze.
Pre-Arctic, excuse me.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 52, State Affairs by the State Affairs Committee, relating to a nuclear freeze, subarctic and Arctic.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, in an effort to perhaps craft some amendments that might make the some of the opponents of the bill more comfortable with it, I'll move at this time that the HJR 52, be returned to rules.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Still under unfinished business, Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. At this time, this committee would like to waive CS for House Bill 693, State Affairs, to the next committee of referral, which is Finance. This is an act establishing the Alaska Research Policy. And House Bill number 531, which is an act establishing the Risk Management Collateral Fund for the University of Alaska and providing for an effective date. This is essentially an insurance bill, received extensive hearings in Labor and Commerce that has several members, and all the members were agreed to waive that bill to Finance as well.
Are there any objections to the motion to waive the two bills to the next committee of referral? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we take up the reconsideration of CS Finance House Bill 470 at this time.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 470, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the release of oil and hazardous substances, repealing the oil spill mitigation account, and providing for an effective date. Third reading, and I have a proposed amendment on my desk.
Okay. The bill is before us in third reading. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment which has been circulated. Ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to moving back from third to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Hearing no objections, we are back in second reading for the purpose of that amendment. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
Are there any objections to the amendment proposed? Amendment number 3. Would the clerk please make reference to that amendment?
Amendment number 3 by Pettyjohn, and it starts on page 5, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
The amendment has been moved. Are there any objections to amendment number 3? Hearing no objections, amendment number 3 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Is there any debate?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 470, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
33 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 470, Finance Amended, has passed the House on reconsideration. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House, that the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 470, Finance Amended, be considered the roll call on the several effective dates.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clauses? Hearing no objection, the effective date clauses have been adopted. I believe also on 470, did we have a letter of intent? Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the body concur in the letter of intent on committee substitute for House Bill 470, Finance Amended.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the letter of intent, Finance? Hearing no objection, the letter of intent is adopted. Still under unfinished business. Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up reconsideration of House Bill 382 at this time.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 382, financed by the Finance Committee. An act creating a retirement incentive program for state employees and the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before us in third reading. Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we go back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment which is on the members' desks.
Hearing objections will allow the representative a little latitude to flesh out his arguments on his amendment.
Mr. Speaker, this is amendment number 3, and it is sort of a compromise between the amendment that I introduced the other day, excuse me, and my colleague from the Tudor, Muldoon area in Anchorage introduced. My former amendment would have required that any given position vacated by retirement would have been left vacant. The other amendment the other day would have expanded that to the entire executive branch. This, as a compromise, expands it only to the department or independent agency. And as you can see, it reads that for each employee who is appointed to a retirement, the department or agency shall reduce by 1 its number of position control numbers. In other words, the department, the entire department of revenue, for example, can reduce some other position somewhere else, can leave some other positions vacant, not necessarily the one that is vacated by retirement. I think it makes a lot of sense because we're going to have to cut the number of PCNs, we're going to have to cut the number of employees, and I think this is a logical, legitimate, essentially painless way to do it. When someone leaves by retirement, by giving the commissioner, for example, latitude to determine where that reduction in force shall occur. Therefore, I ask my colleagues to support this amendment.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask the members to vote against returning to second reading to adopt this amendment. The reason is, I believe, very clear why this will not work. What this requires is if a department determines that they're going to retire someone under the retirement incentive program that we have just passed, they also have to eliminate a position. For example,
Just take the same example I gave with Marine Highways. If they determine that they want to retire a high-level captain, who's captain of a ship, who's a range 28, whatever he is, he may even be higher than that, and replace him with another necessary captain at a range 26, if we adopt this amendment, they would be prohibited from doing that unless they also eliminated some other position. And what it really is going to mean is the department is not going to participate in the program. They're going to say, why should I do that? If I can save money by laying off that or by retiring that captain, I'll do it. But if I also have to then get rid of a deckhand, another PCN, I'm not even going to participate. So I think the real intent of this amendment is to probably kill the whole program. Mr. Speaker, the intent of the program is clear, is to save money, and management flexibility is an important part of that. So I would urge that we not adopt this amendment. I think the bottom line is it will make the program inoperative and will not serve the purpose that we all want, that to reduce state government. I would also suggest that the vote to go back to second reading in this case is a real policy vote because it does change the intent of the bill if this amendment is adopted.
Are you ready for the question? We allowed some latitude to the sponsor of the who asked to move back to second reading to discuss his amendment and response by the prime sponsor. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 382 Finance be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
13 yeas, 20 nays.
The motion to go back to second reading has failed.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have the bill that's on the board before us in third reading. Is there any debate? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to bring kind of a note to the body here on this, and as it relates to much of the discussion we've had here in the last several days, both formally and informally, related to the budget. And I think it's very important that we adopt this legislation. I noted in the previous attempt to amend this legislation that there was an effort to say if you replace somebody, if you take and allow somebody to retire because it is cost effective, that you're not going to allow them to be replaced. Well, what I would have indicated to many people is we need that flexibility now more than ever within many of the departments. The major department that I deal with very closely and have for the last 4 years, and again, as I indicated in debate yesterday, has many sections and divisions which have allowed many high-paid, long-term employees to be positioned at the top level. I look at a mechanics division where a mechanic shop where you may have a 23, 24 level position, long term has the ability to bump downward. So if you come in and just do a cross the board cut, you're going to end up, in essence, without this flexibility, cutting out mechanics to retain the chiefs. And we need to give the administration that flexibility to allow, to move out that chief, reorganize, and retain some productive mechanics. That isn't to say that the chief isn't there. The chief is probably just as productive as ever. And he's going to be able to work and do his job. But we're probably going to be able to get a much more efficient operation under a budget reduction period with this type of legislation than if we didn't have it. So with that, I also noted, Mr. Speaker, in the newspaper, one of my quotes out of my last speech were taken, and I want to note that, and it said here, you're moving out dinosaurs and moving in young workers. I want to apologize to anybody that may assume that what I was talking about is necessarily age there. What I'm talking about, again, is precisely that issue with regard to long-term workers who are working there, who have the seniority to be retained there, holding down a major portion of the budget, where we're not going to have the flexibility to move down and readjust it and allow for the productivity that you're going to have within that workforce. And I think it's a vital tool that we pass on to the other body and up to the administration to deal with the budget reductions during this next year. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we go back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment number 4 by Navarre, page 1, line 10. Delete some and may, and insert after the word agencies the word will. This is being duplicated, but it hasn't come back in yet.
The amendment is being duplicated, but we'll give the representative latitude to discuss that amendment. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it may be unnecessary to duplicate it after I read it. It's fairly simple. The bill now reads, since some state agencies may find it necessary to reduce their personal services costs because of declining state revenue, and the amendment would change it to read, since state agencies will find it necessary to reduce their personal services. I think, Mr. Speaker, all I'm trying to do here is send a message to them that there's no may about this. We need to cut state operating budget, and they're going to find it necessary.
The motion before us is to move back from third to second reading for the purpose of the specific amendment. Are you ready for the question?
The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 382 Finance be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
32 yeas, no nays.
The bill is before us in second reading. Move the amendment.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to amendment number 4? Hearing no objections, amendment number 4 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Representative Pignalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just very much enjoyed watching the dinosaur do a backstroke. Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of talk about flexibility and management flexibility with this bill, and I just don't want there to be any confusion. The amendments that we've talked about today and the time last when the bill was before us in third reading would have allowed the governor, not a department, but the governor through his Office of Management and Budget, to have flexibility in deleting the dollar value of PCNs from anywhere in the executive branch. That is true management flexibility. The kind of flexibility that the bill has now is simply that, the governor may or may not choose to fill a PCN. We're doing nothing. There really is no flexibility to allow PCNs to be cashed out, so to speak, under the program. For every PCN that someone retires from, there's going to be all the internal pressure to fill it again. So there is no management flexibility because we didn't adopt the amendment.
Any further debate? Representative Peru.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with the previous speaker. As I understand the bill here, it certainly sounds great. I think I can support it. However, it's been sold to us under the aegis of cutting costs. Is it really going to cut costs, even though we just voted in the word will instead of may? That certainly is not a mandate. It doesn't require the executive branch to cut any costs. And in my opinion, this could, in fact, end up costing the state money by retiring some people, but they're still going to be replaced with other people. Hopefully we'll save money, but there is nothing in here to mandate that PCNs be vacated. Therefore, I agree with the previous speaker that we should have adopted some sort of amendment requiring that people who are retired are not replaced.
Ready for the question. Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 382, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
33 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 382, Finance Amended, has passed the House on reconsideration.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 382, Finance Amended, be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objections, the effective date clause has been adopted. We are still under unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I have a request for excused absence from Representative Euling. I move that he be excused from the call Friday, April 11th, Saturday, April 12th, Sunday, April 13th, through plain time, Monday, April 14th.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, that representative is excused from the call of the House. Any further unfinished business? This brings us down to committee announcements, standing or special. Representative Kopanen.
It is with great regret that Hess Committee announces that they shall be meeting at 4:30 to take up unfinished business from yesterday's meeting.
Representative Miller.
Greater regret that I remind members of the Judiciary Committee that we'll have a meeting tomorrow morning, Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to comply with the rule, the unfinished business in the Hess Committee will include, not necessarily in this order, House Bill 520, School Debt Retirement, House Bill 99, Public Assistance Work Programs, House Bill 602, Regulation of Post-Secondary Institutions, House Bill 688, Tax Credits for Educational Institutions, and House Bill 426, relating to the Post-Secondary Educational Commission. I'd ask the members to be prompt so that we can take as many of these up as possible and dispose of our business and be gone.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Labor and Commerce Committee meeting will be canceled today. Committee met last night to discuss the same topic that is on the committee meeting scheduled for today, and we're going to take the weekend to work up a new draft of the House Bill 532, and it will be heard on Monday.
Any further committee announcements? Announcements? Representative Pinyalberry.
At ease.
Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we were under announcements of committees, and we're still there. Are there any further announcements of committee nature? General announcements? Representative Navarre?
Mr. Speaker, tomorrow morning at 10:15, the legislative basketball team has its first game in the annual tournament, and ask the members to be there around 10 anyhow so we can have a chance to warm up, and we will prevail again this year.
Any further announcements? This brings us down to special orders. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor to speak on fiscal year 87 budget plan?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to take just a few minutes this morning to speak about the planning that's going into a fiscal year 87 spending plan for this state. Mr. Speaker, I read with interest not only the letter from the members of the Minority Caucus, eight members of the Minority Caucus that was sent to the governor yesterday, but also with interest the article that was in the local newspaper about the press conference that they held to explain their position on how they would handle the spending plan for FY87. Mr. Speaker, I read that with interest because I really didn't find anything new in there. It just kind of confirmed some of the rumors I've heard around the halls. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, I think it's real easy to make political statements that make headlines without any real rational thought behind those statements. Mr. Speaker, I think when we begin to make statements about what we're going to do with the FY87 spending plan, whether it be reduce the operating budget by a certain level or the capital budget or anything else we're going to do, that they should there should be a well-thought-out plan. Mr. Speaker, as I read the paper and the letter from the minority, it became clear that they were saying, well, we know what we want to do. We want to cut $200 million out of the operating budget. We want to maintain capital budget at X number of dollars or even higher, and we want to do this and that. We don't have a plan to do that yet, but that's what we want to do. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to commend you and the rest of the leadership of this House because you haven't heard those types of statements from the majority caucus. I think instead what you have heard is a real concern about putting together a spending plan that is rational, reasonable, and based on some long-term goals and objectives for this state. And once those are decided upon by the majority members of this body, then the actual numbers for that spending plan will start to go together. Mr. Speaker, I think that's a responsible way to address the financial problems that we have in this state this year, next year, and in the coming years, and that when we start making statements about what level of spending there's going to be for various programs, either operating capital or pass-through grants, whatever it may be, that we have some rationale and some reason behind it, and we spent some time looking at the actual impact. I want to take just a couple minutes to refer directly to two or three of the proposals that were made by the minority members, which I think reflect perhaps that they haven't looked real deeply at the impact that those statements might have if they were carried forward. For example, Mr. Speaker, in the letter to Governor Sheffield, one of their points was that they would cut the FY87 operating budget by a minimum of 10%, or approximately $200 million, minimum. Secondly, that they would insist to the maximum degree possible on the maintenance of the capital budget. Another one was that they'd take all steps possible to enhance all areas of the private sector economy. Mr. Speaker, I think those types of statements sell real well. I think they're a real good frosting on the cake, but after the cake is baked, it may taste pretty bad. Speaker, I don't think a whole lot of thought has gone into those statements, and I would like to just talk about that for a minute if I can. The impact of operating cuts, of course, is debatable, and I don't think right now, and I wouldn't dare to infer that there's any agreement necessarily within the majority caucus on a level of operating cuts or on what programs should be cut or on a level of the capital budget or what capital projects should be funded, but there's a debate and a discussion and a very reasoned approach going on within that caucus to determine what the proper level of funding is. And I believe that once that is done, then you'll see a statement from yourself and from the finance chairman about where we intend to go with the budget process. But I think during that discussion, a lot of things will be taken into consideration, and I would hope that the minority members of this body would do the same. And I know, for example, that Governor Sheffield is doing that. Mr. Speaker, I think we have to think about the impact of a minimum reduction of $200 million in the operating budget, the impact on the economy of this state, and the impact on programs and services. And when we make that kind of a statement, and if we adopt that kind of plan, we better be ready to defend which programs are going to be cut and which ones are not, and what impact that's going to have on the economy. Mr. Speaker, we know that well over 40% of that operating budget is passed through grants and programs to municipalities, that there's debt service involved, there's just some areas that are real hard to cut. Well, we can cut pass-through grants, we can cut educational funding and municipal assistance and revenue sharing, but before you make that decision, you better evaluate very carefully the impact that's going to have on those programs and services, and the impact that's going to have on the local economy, because a lot of those dollars, most of those dollars, are the basis for a lot of jobs in the local sector, in the local economy, in various communities throughout this state. The other thing, of course, is very clear to me, and I'm going to quote some figures here in a few minutes, is most of those dollars from those programs stay right in those communities and continue to work for those communities, not just for the public sector, but for the private sector that is there because there is government spending. Mr. Speaker, if you don't cut there, then you have to cut elsewhere in the operating budget, and what that translates into is cutting employees. Now, it's real easy for a lot of people to stand up and say, well, we don't know who those people are. They're just numbers. They're slots. We'll just cut them out. It's easy to do that. We'll take $200 million and X number of employees, and it doesn't hurt anybody. But, of course, a more reasonable approach, you understand that those are people, real people, with families, with houses, with mortgages, and the people who live in each and every community in this state who support the private sector and support the small businessman and keep our economy in this state going. They're very important people. Mr. Speaker, someone will say, well, you're saying that because you're from Juneau. I'm saying that because I'm from Juneau, but I'm saying that also because I'm concerned about the overall impact on this state. Juneau comes in number three, number-wise, on government employment. Anchorage, for example, if you include the executive and the judicial branch and the university, has a total of 7,986 employees, according to the figure I got, 7,986, number one. Number two is Fairbanks, with 5,899, and number three is my community of Juneau with 4,578, and I didn't look at all the other employees that are scattered around this state because of government spending and who are contributing to the local economy. Well, percentage-wise, Juneau's probably high. So the impact on our economy is going to be pretty great. But I think if we start looking at the financial plan, and I know that the majority caucus is concerned about this, and we're debating it. There may not be agreement right now, but there will be at some point. You've also got to look at the impact on the economies of each and every community in this state, of Anchorage and Fairbanks. And a large reduction in expenditures in the operating budget area in those two communities will have a tremendous negative impact on that economy. And we've got to be ready to defend that if that's the decision. And quite honestly, with the proposal laid out by the minority, I don't see that they're ready to defend that because I don't believe that they've carefully evaluated that. Mr. Speaker, in addition to that, I think there's one other important consideration. One of the goals that this legislature has had, I have it, and I think everyone here, if I